to the Web 2.0 show with your hosts, Josh Owens
and Chris Saylor. We're a show about the new web,
the latest thoughts and technology behind internet development and content delivery. Welcome to episode 15. We have Tontek Cilik with us. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Tontek. Where you're from, who you've worked for in the past, what you do now, that type of thing.
Sure. So I'm from San Francisco, California. Currently, I'm working for Technorati as their chief technologist. In recent history, I've worked for Microsoft for a little over 7 years, and most of the time spent on the Mac browser, Mac Internet Explorer. In particular, a lot of the work I did went into leading the development of the Tasman rendering engine, which we shipped in IE5 Mac, had better standard support at the time than any other browser, which is quite an accomplishment, both just for web standards and for Microsoft. It was a lot of fun. It's sort of amazing. I was there for a little over 7 years. But before I was at Microsoft, I did a little startup with a colleague called Six Prime, doing Macintosh software consulting and some product development as well. And then before that, I was at Apple for about 4 years, working on a little-known project called OpenDoc that was used for compound documents and component software, and Apple even built a internet suite out of it called CyberDog.
I remember CyberDog. That was actually pretty cool.
Yeah, in many ways it was so far ahead of its time. I think that certainly the management at Apple didn't really grok like what was the sort of big deal about it. It allowed people to build different browser components like FTP or whatever, all separately, independently, and it was all pluggable, completely pluggable architecture.
Oh, sounds like we have Ryan King joining us.
So basically, I've been working on documents and formats and browsers and that kind of thing for quite some time.
Yeah.
And most recently, I think that my interests have been around what's going on with the real-time web, what's going on with independent publishing, which I think is a really big trend that we've seen take off like in the last, certainly last 4 or 5 years, since right. blogs have really started to become mainstream.
We just had Ryan King join us. Ryan, tell us a little bit about yourself, who you've worked for in the past, where you're from, that kind of thing.
First of all, thanks for having me, guys. Really enjoy the podcast. I moved to San Francisco about a year and a half ago. Before that, I'd been living in the Midwest in Kansas City and Oklahoma doing independent web development. Moved to San Francisco to study at the University of San Francisco, working on a master's degree in internet engineering. I'm about halfway done with that now. And then last summer, started working with Technorati on an intern basis, and now working part-time as I finish my studies. So I do, and at Technorati, I work on a little bit of everything, web development stuff, working on the microformats community site, and help out wherever I can.
So does Technorati actually pay you guys to work on that, during the workday, or is that more of a side project with the microformats?
It's absolutely core to the work that we're doing. So one of the things that we've recognized at Technorati is that when you look at weblogs, they fundamentally differ than sort of the rest of the pages on the web. It's sort of like almost like a second generation web that we're seeing with weblogs, and that is that, first of all, they've encoded in their structure the notion of time. And so you've got this whole concept of blog posts that are date time stamped that are published in reverse chronological order, so most recent at the top. And that whole notion is completely primary to blogs. The other notion is that there's a very strong identity associated with blogs. So with almost all blogs, there's some group blogs, but literally like 99.99% of blogs are all written by one individual, about that individual. So there's a very strong association with a person with that blog. And that's very different than other pages on the web, which are just about some particular topic and maybe authored by who knows whom. So given that, a lot of the blogging tools actually have been putting out a lot more structural markup, a lot more semantic markup over the ages. And we've seen this trend of the blogging tools willing to take up and adopt more semantic markup, more structural markup, more quickly than the rest of the web. So one of the things we do at Technorati is we actually index all those axes of information. We index across time, we index across people, and more recently, we've been indexing across topics with tags. We've recognized that given that there's this new medium that's been emerging, this real-time structured web, there's a lot of opportunity there for bloggers and for independent publishers in general to publish a lot of very semantic structured content and have it picked up and aggregated and distributed and found much more so than there is with sort of like the web 1.0, first generation of the web, as it were. And as a result, we at Technorati have tried to index all the current trends and standards that are out there. And then what we've seen is bloggers putting out structured content themselves without really standardizing on what they're doing. So we saw a great opportunity there to essentially work with a lot of other tool makers, blogging tool makers, you know, other major companies, and say, hey, if we just can agree on some conventions, then we can make all this content more valuable to everybody, especially to the people publishing it. And a lot out of that, and plus out of talking with a lot of web designers and looking at a lot of web design trends towards semantic markup, microformats was born. And so we're working jointly with dozens of other companies and developing all these different microformats to really encourage an ecosystem around structured real-time content on the web that will hopefully usher in a whole new way of using the web.
One thing I'd like to add to that is, yeah, certainly part of our jobs are to work on microformats, and that's part of what we do at Technorati. Those of us at Technorati work on microformats are definitely the minority of people who are working on microformats. We try to provide as much resource and leadership that we can, but we literally have hundreds of people on our mailing list. We have hundreds of people who have contributed to our community wiki, and we have probably even more people who have implemented, either published or working on parsing microformats. So it's definitely a community effort, and I'm just kind of glad to be a part of it and to see so much enthusiasm from so many people.
You guys actually gave an excellent talk at South by Southwest on microformats. We'll actually link to that in the show notes. And there's actually you left the mm-hmm. presentation online.
Yes.
We'll link to that as well. It actually goes through some of the different implementations of microformats and the tools. Now, one thing I didn't see mentioned was the SSE extensions mm-hmm. for, I guess it's updating information. Were you guys involved in that, or what's your opinion on that?
So we were not involved in SSE at all. I think at this point we're sort of trying to evaluate it and see, how does it work and how does it sort of solve, what synchronization kind of types of problems. I think in many ways it's trying to address a different category of problems than microformats. Because if you look at what microformats have been designed for and built for, they're literally based around existing behavior, web publisher behavior on the web. Whereas if you look at various sites on the web, you don't see that much people publishing information about synchronization. Or rather, you don't see things like lists of content, which are then published with all the metadata, visibly at least, for synchronization purposes. So it is kind of a special purpose format. I'm sure that it's one of these things that, assuming it operates independently of whatever the underlying data is, that you could apply it to microformats or any other formats.
So and they definitely work on different levels. Whereas with microformats, we're just working on ways to structure or to mark up structured data, right? To express structured data. Whereas SSE in particular is more of a protocol, how given we have data with structure, how do we move it back and forth and synchronize it and do updates? So they have somewhat different concerns.
For your listeners out there, I can give them the URL to our wiki page, in fact, about today's presentation, where they can go check out links to all the individual presenters' slides and everything. And that's at microformats.org/wiki/events/2006-03-13-SXSW-microformats.
We'll also link that in the show notes as well.
It's very cool. I was very interested to see Jeremy Keith gave a little presentation. I think you guys kind of added him at the last minute. About an actual real-world implementation of it. That was very cool. I haven't seen a lot of real-world implementation that seems to really wow me yet. Have you guys seen a lot of stuff that looks promising? I mean, what are you guys seeing?
Well, certainly, there's a number of implementations that kind of happen without you even noticing. For example, event sites like upcoming.org and eventful.com both have hCalendar and hCard support, but you can't actually tell it. Since it's just in the markup, you can't actually tell that they've added structured data unless you have a tool that will highlight that and extract it for you. And so a lot of the adoption's been pretty quiet for that reason alone, because it doesn't always get advertised big. And so only those of us who have tools that highlight and extract the data will see it initially. But things like Jeremy's implementation actually are a really good example of the potentials for microformats, because a lot of what we talk about around microformats, the use case is someone building an aggregator or a search engine that like will aggregate all of it and then lets you do search on events or contacts or we have tag search, which is built on microformat. But Jeremy's example, which for those who haven't seen it, he essentially had a list of hCalendars and hCards of all the parties he wanted to go to at South by Southwest. And then Jeremy, being an excellent JavaScript hacker, was able to build an awesome Google Maps mashup of this thing, which kind of helped him track, you know, which parties he wanted to go to, which is actually very important at South by Southwest for those who haven't been here.
Definitely.
And but it shows that, like, the microperformance are beneficial not just for people who want to build search engines or aggregators. It can be very handy for people who want to build either, you know, JavaScript or DOM scripting applications on their own sites, or people who want to build browser extensions, people who want to build, you know, GreaseMonkey scripts that can do smart things with this data. And it can also be helpful for people doing web design who can then write style sheets or, you know, portions of style sheets that can be useful in many contexts, because you have the same kind of hooks to apply your styles to in many contexts. So his example is actually very interesting in that regard, because it's not just about vertical search engines. You know, it's actually beneficial for pretty much everyone in the ecosystem. It's beneficial for publishers, for designers, and for people who want to write software to consume it.
There's also a bunch of implementations that are so quiet and sort of so unnoticeable that you don't even realize that you're using microformats to make it all work. Some of the sort of most popular and most well-known examples are, for example, the RHEL license microformat, which has been adopted by Creative Commons in all the license generation tools that they have. And then it's been adopted by Google and Yahoo in their respective Creative Commons sort of license rights-based search that they have. So you can literally search for Creative Commons licensed works, you know, across both those search engines. And they just sort of quietly have implemented that and didn't make a big deal out of it, didn't make a big deal about the fact that it was a microformat that was doing it. It just sort of works. Another one is, of course, the RHEL nofollow microformat that Google and various blogging tool vendors all work together on, search engine developers, to help fight link spam. So a lot of these things have been implemented so broadly and so seamlessly, which is exactly how they should be, that you don't hear a lot about it for microformats per se, and we think that's actually just fine. In the end, as long as you're building something that's of service to the user, to the folks using the web, that's what really counts.
Yeah, actually, we just licensed our podcast under Creative Commons license, and when I went and generated the code to put on our website, I noticed that it was a microformat.
That's awesome.
From a consumer point of view or a user point of view, do you think it's going to take something like what Flock's trying to do with integration in order to get this working seamlessly for a user to be able to pull a calendar from upcoming straight into, say, like their blog or something?
I think we're going to see two classes of sort of tools and services come out that really, you know, magnify the sort of importance and relevance of microformats. The first is that search engines, so like Google and Yahoo have done with RHEL license, you know, Technorati has done with tags, with the RHEL tag microformat, and that just has taken off, you know, like nuts. Just they're you know, over at this point, I forget what the exact numbers are, but it's like somewhere in the millions, like 80 million or so. You have to check the David Siffrey's most recent State of the Blogosphere post on that. But like tagged posts in the blogosphere, it's like clearly achieved beyond critical mass, you know, gone mainstream. And I think that what we'll see more and more search engines that actually take advantage of microformats as we see more and more of them there out in the wild. The second is, as you mentioned, tools like Flock, that either browser extensions to Firefox or, you know, a complete like solution like Flock that you just download and run, that literally as you're running it, it just watches the pages you're browsing and it pulls out these little chunks of microformat information. So that later, if you're searching for like, oh yeah, what was that person's name that I saw on that page that time? You don't know where it was in your history, but maybe just like typing in their first or last name, because it's in this cache of microformatted data, it can pull out and say, oh yeah, you've got an H card, contact info for that person, or you've got an H calendar event that's taking place at that venue. And that we see as extremely, extremely handy. Another use that's available to publishers right away is literally just the H card to V card converter feed service that we've published at Technorati, which is that literally every single business out there wants everybody else to have them in their address book, right? So all they have to do is mark up their contact information with HCard and with a link to the service, which is feeds.technorati.com/contacts, slash and then the URL they want to convert. They literally can add download and add to address book capability for anybody browsing their site. And this is really compelling. I mean, Avon has implemented H cards for all 40,000 of the home pages of their representatives.
Yeah, that's actually where I work. I found that funny when you mentioned that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You work at Avon?
Yeah, I do.
Interesting.
I work in the contact center, so
okay.
I do IT work there. Yeah. I had no idea they implemented it until I saw it on Slashdot. I was like, holy crap, my company made the front page. That's weird.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I didn't know that made it on Slashdot.
Yeah, it did. Wow. It was on there.
You mentioned tagging data really taking off. We actually saw women's visibility on the web, Tarrant Hunt was a part of, and several times they actually mentioned in order for the women to find themselves and help promote, you know, their own craft, they actually mentioned several times tagging their posts and their data.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, tagging, that's a whole other topic. In addition to microformats, we just happen to have a format that enables distributed tagging. But yeah, tagging has been very effective for communities to kind of ad hoc kind of assimilate and find each other and then coalesce. It's been I think it's been a good thing for the blogosphere to be able to kind of create community in that ad hoc sort of way.
Yeah, actually, you've worked on you have a service called Supercilious. Is that what it's called?
yeah.
It's kind of a tagging engine.
myself and a friend of mine, Aaron Globin. We built a website called Supercilious, and that's supr.c.ilio.us, which we bill as the world's first social tagging site. The motivation behind it was that we noticed that there's, you know, a bunch of tagging sites, right? You know, we have Delicious, which is for bookmarks, and Konatia, which is for academic papers, and Flickr, where you can tag photos, and so on and so forth. But we knew there were more, and so we built a site where you could tag those sites, tag them with the things that you can tag on them, and then people can find other tagging sites, which, of course, this whole thing was done as a joke, right? I mean, we're like,
right.
You know, we built a little Rails app in a weekend. We spent like a total of 12 hours on it, I think, and it still has like the Rails scaffolding style and everything, but it was actually been interesting. Like, I've actually found interesting tagging sites through it that I had never heard of. Like there's a Polish food tagging site, I think. And like, there's all sorts of weird, really niche tagging sites. I found a tagging site for, mixed drinks, like this, like community site where you can put up recipes for mixed drinks. Right. And then people vote on them and tag them and stuff.
Oh, are you talking about Extra Tasty?
Extra Tasty. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the guys that put out Threadless.
Yeah. Yeah. I found that on Supercilious.
Yeah.
Someone had tagged on Supercilious. I was like, this is awesome.
Yeah. Actually, we get hits every once in a while from Supercilious.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Kind of funny.
Nice. I'm glad we could help you out.
Now you guys kind of have a satirical blog too, don't you?
Right. On Supercilious as well, we have a blog that, Aaron and I kind of do to, vent frustration every once in a while, and to it's mostly good-natured fun, to kind of poke fun at the whole Web 2.0 phenomenon and have a little fun with people. We try not to be mean. We'll be a bit snarky and a little bit biting, but most people we make fun of end up being all right with it and being civil. We try to keep it civil and hopefully entertaining as well. We don't have a ton of readers, but
yeah, I think some of our listeners are definitely readers. Now you bring up snarking and, you know, that whole thing, and there was the whole bar camp snarking that just happened.
Oh, the bar camp versus
jumping the shark
thing.
Yeah. Kind of give us your thoughts on, I guess, TailRank and MimioRandom and that stuff as far as tracking stuff like that. Your thoughts on all that stuff.
So you're talking about the meme aggregators and how they can track the conversation stuff.
Yeah.
I find them very useful, like, because as I get involved in more and more projects, I have less time to actually be subscribed to a bunch of feeds and read them all. So they're very handy because I kind of like just pop them open once a day and like scan the entire list, you know, take like 2 minutes and scan the whole list and click on a couple things that look most interesting. And as a computer science student and stuff, they're really, really interesting because they're actually very, very challenging problems. And I have a lot of respect for the guys who have done them, like Kevin Burton, who's done TailRank, and Gabe Riviera has done MemeRandom, and there's many more that have done interesting stuff. And so they're really interesting computer science problems, and they're also very, very useful for people who want to kind of keep track of things without having to drown themselves in a river of noise.
Yeah. Another big challenge with those is that there's so many different there's over 30 million blogs that Technorati is indexing in real time right now. And it's like, I remember when you could actually read all the, you know, you sort of like go through and read all the blogs that were out there. And that was just, you could easily do that every day. And that's, those times are long past. And now it seems like the biggest need is sort of like a whole bunch of filtering and organizing tools for finding out like what's relevant, you know, either through various computer science algorithms to aggregate various hot memes, or And just through really simple filtering mechanisms, like, you know, on Technorati, you can sign up for a watch list on any topic or any URL, so anyone's talking about that, or any tag for that matter, or tagging their posts with that information, you can go find out about, like, who's talking about South by Southwest, for example. Now, earlier, Chris, you asked a question about women using tagging to find each other in communities and such, and that's, you know, that's really important. You actually touched on a really, really important point, which is all this metadata, all this, like, structure and stuff. You know, if you're an academic, if you're a computer science, you love it, right? But if you're a typical person, why should you bother? You know, it's like, well, it's extra work, and, you know, it seems like a huge waste of time. Why would you even bother doing any of it? You know, people fundamentally just want to do what they want to do and get on with it. What you pointed out, though, is a really important element, which is that when you come up with a system, like with tags, if the system is designed to reward those that participate, then you get adoption. And that's exactly what's going on. So with tagging, the example you pointed out is you had different communities of women that wanted to sort of find each other with different topics they had in common. And so they tagged their blog posts about it, and then they literally later went on and searched those tags for other people talking about the same topic and found each other.
Right. Now, you know, one of the things that you can obviously run into is, you know, if you do a search for woman or women on Google, you're definitely probably not going to get what you want returned to you. It's going to be a bunch of porn sites or something like that. I don't. Do you see that as a possible problem with tagging, or do you think the community just kind of takes care of that on its own?
It's really interesting because with tagging, because it has to be much more of an overt action that you do rather than just sort of implicit categorization through whatever computer science algorithms you have, the community does a lot of self-selection. Now, of course, any kind of system where you can explicitly, you know, say what topics you're supposedly talking about can be spammed, right? So that's of course, that can be a huge problem. Fortunately for us, the spammers, they aren't too smart. So the way that they spam, there's actually, especially in the real-time web, there's a number of different patterns that they sort of give off as like little red flags. They might not even know that they're giving off. That through a whole bunch of really good analytics and numerical analysis and stuff, we've been able to sort of prune a lot of that out. Nevertheless, when you talk about a really general tag like women, you might find that people are talking about all kinds of different subjects related to women, whereas you might want to try and pick a more specific tag, like, you know, women on the web or something that, you know, or conferences or something like that, or even look for multiple tags.
Right.
So you can look for posts with multiple tags and try and, like, narrow down, you know, the topics that you're interested in that way.
Okay, very cool. All right, I guess you guys were kind of involved with setting up Barcamp. Tell us about that whole idea and how that came about.
Wow, that we could take a whole other hour on that.
That's a long story.
I'm sure.
The short story is it started in the backseat of my car. But well, it actually started in my car. We were Tontek and I, and I don't remember who the third person was. We still can't remember who it was. We were driving down to an event called Super Happy Dev House.
Were you driving?
I thought so. I don't know.
It was your car, so you were probably driving.
Yeah.
I think I was passenger.
It was probably Ron.
Was it Chris Messina, maybe?
That's a possibility.
It's possible it was Chris, too.
Yeah.
Because whoever was the third person, can you please, like, let us know? Because
we've
forgotten. Speak up.
But anyways, we're talking about Foo Camp, which was coming up soon. And Tontek had been the previous year, but hadn't been invited back. So we're like, screw this. We'll just do our own thing, right? Like, it's like, we can do this. It can't be that difficult, right? And so this was like a month before, or maybe a couple months before Foo Camp.
Yeah, I think it was about 6 weeks or so. And it was about the time that, like, a lot of my peers that I know, you know, had sort of gotten earlier invites and stuff to Foo Camp. And I was like, well, you know, it looks like the invites have gone out. Maybe I'm not going back this year. And I started to get this feeling like, well, you know, I remember what it was like. I remember all the details. Like, okay, we had the program grids. We had the three-word intros. We had, you know, places to crash and, you know, regular meals and, like, a place to shower. So, like, okay, given that those are all the components, like, how hard can this be to sort of reverse engineer and reproduce? And so I sort of challenged Ryan and, you know, a few other friends, like, hey, you know, if you guys want to do something like this, you know, I'd be more than happy to help, like, give you all the logistics and, like, you know, what I experienced firsthand and try and walk through it. So that was that, and I think that we were all really busy at the time, so it kind of was forgotten for a while.
And then Tontek got invited to Foo Camp and
took, the next day
and accepted the invitation. And so that was like 6 weeks ahead of time. 5 weeks later, literally 6 days before Foo Camp would start, I believe there were five of us, myself, Tontek, Chris Messina, Andy Smith,
Matt Mullenweg.
Matt Mullenweg, and then Aris Stasi joined us as well.
Yep.
Later, decided, you know what? I think we can do this. And this was 6 days ahead of time. So we meet at Ritual Roasters, the Web 2.0 coffee shop.
I think we were on IRC.
Well, that too. That
like,
first.
We were on IRC first, and we're like, Chris was like, what was that thing?
No, we were on IRC and said, let's meet at Ritual Roasters.
That's right.
That's about the extent of it. And so that's we met at Ritual Roasters on a Saturday, with the next Friday being the start of Food Camp, and decided, you know what? We can do this. And so right there, we started planning, started sending out like just questions like, hey, you know, you have a venue. Can you get food? Can you get money? And register the domain name and set up a wiki that day. And literally by about Tuesday of that week, we had a venue. We had, you know, people volunteering to set up like satellite internet connections. We had donations of food from a number of companies. And by the end of the week, we were actually turning donations down.
Wow.
From the very beginning, we wanted it to be replicable. Like, we wanted this to be something that, knowing that we, being in San Francisco and the number of internet companies and people that are interested in these kind of events around, we knew that we were privileged, right? That
right.
we have more connections and more money available to us than most places in the world. And so we decided that we're going to do it as cheap as possible. Not any cheaper, but as
by design.
As possible.
Yeah.
By design.
Yeah.
So that, at the very least, other people can do it. So we were able to do it for a few $1,000 plus a venue, which included food and beer and alcohol for a couple hundred people for a weekend. I think in one regard, we've at least been somewhat successful in that it has been replicable. Like, it's going all over the world now. I mean, there's going to be one in
right.
India. There's going to be one in South Africa.
There was one in India. Barcamp New Delhi happened.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot. But there's
like, the photos
one.
Are on Flickr.
There's another one in Hyderabad or
Chennai, I think.
Or Chennai. Yeah, there's another one being planned.
And then Cape Town is also coming up.
Cape Town's coming up. There's one in Amsterdam, New York, Dallas.
Barcamp Boston was, what, last Saturday?
Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
There's so many that I actually cannot keep up with them all now, obviously.
Yeah, maybe we'll have a Cincinnati or a Miami coming up.
That'd be awesome. And so from there, it was a great weekend for the first Barcamp in Palo Alto, and it seems that other people have been able to replicate it. So I like to think we've been somewhat successful in that regard. And since then, of course, our ideas about it have kind of congealed a little more. And like Christmasina especially has really kind of carried the torch since that time to help kind of other cities kind of – he's kind of helped guide them and help them through the process. And so he's been a big part of it since then.
We usually ask our guests, you know, do they have any super secret information they want to reveal? Obviously, you guys work for Technorati. So what – you guys working on anything that's coming out soon?
Well, let's see. Well, what we recently released, which I think would be, you know, maybe of interest to your audience, is the Technorati favorites. So this is a feature whereby literally when you're on Technorati, you're doing any search, you know, you see any results, you see the little stars next to every single blog in the results. And so if you find one of these that you like, you can just like star it, add it to your favorites. You know, you can also import your favorites in OPML or Shosho formats from your feed reader or whatever. But then once you've done that, you have some really cool features. Like you can just browse what are the most recent posts from across all your favorites. You know, it's kind of like traditional sort of aggregator river of posts kind of style. But you can also syndicate that in sort of summary, you know, header, title kind of form to your blog. So, you know, like on my blog, tontech.com, you can see in the right column, like here's a bunch of the blogs that I'm currently watching. But what's even cooler than that is assuming you do something like, let's say you put all your friends in your favorites, right? You're all your friends' blogs. Then you can search across them on Technorati. You can basically say, oh, so across all my friends' blogs, I want to find out what are my friends saying about South by Southwest, not just what everyone's saying about South by Southwest. So that's a pretty cool new feature. As far as any other sort of secrets, one of the things that actually is sort of a defining aspect of microformats is that we try and do like literally as much as possible totally out in the open. I mean, we very much have adopted like an open source philosophy, like a Wikipedia community contribution philosophy. So it's kind of interesting. You can go and you can look at any of the specifications and you can see like all the little mistakes we've made in the history and like, you know, every little spammer and everything. And we think that the community is actually stronger for it by making as little secret as possible and making it as open as possible. And that way you sort of, you can tell where did everything come from, who contributed what, see the full story. Even the IRC channel is archived on the web with a permalink for everything anyone says. So the, all the discussions, if anyone wants to sort of, any historian wants to go back and say, well, what happened? How did this come about? They can go back and dig it all up. But
we actually have a supercilious secret.
Oh, okay.
Really not supposed to be talking about yet, but we actually have an announcement we're looking to put out. I guess we'll have to put it out soon now. Supercilious, you know, being a successful Web 2.0 website, has had a lot of companies wanting to acquire it, of course. I mean, it has tagging. I think we put some Ajax in there somewhere. There's pastels.
Rounded corners?
There are rounded corners, oh, yes. Awesome. Yes, we have rounded corners. So it's certainly a Web 2.0 website, which means that, you know, companies want to buy it, of course.
Yahoo, perhaps?
You know, and I've got offers. I told people I'd sell it for $50. No one took me up on it. So the announcement we have to make is really, and this really is news, we're actually not being bought by Yahoo. Unlike every other Web 2.0 company, I know there's been rumors and stuff, we've not been bought by Yahoo. So we actually have a little badge we're putting up on our website that says not a Yahoo company. And we're really, you know, we want everyone else to kind of come out and say we're not being bought by Yahoo. So this I think it's an important thing for Web 2.0 companies to say.
Can you be upfront and be transparent with their disclosure?
Right. Yeah. Be very transparent saying we're not being bought by Yahoo or Google or anyone else. So.
I'd like to be the first to congratulate you on your success.
Well, thank you.
All right. Thanks for being on the show, guys. It was very cool to talk to you.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for having us.
This has been a SteelPixel production. For more information about SteelPixel, you can check out steelpixel.com. Or for more information about the show, feel free to check out web20show.com. That's webv20show.com.